It's good to see all of you again this evening. I hope you're like Carolyn and got a happy nappy today. Well, rainy day is a good time to get a nap. Good sleeping weather, as they say. We're going to go back and look at the book of Proverbs for a few more lessons. We'll try to gain all the messages out of Proverbs that we can. And one thing we're going to look at tonight is the responsibilities that we see in being a Christian cover such a wide variety of responsibilities. And one of those is the proper responsibility that we see in the example of working. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus tells us in verses 13 through 16, and this is paraphrasing, that you are the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. Let your light shine before others. The world ought to see Christ living in you. I saw a little cartoon on Facebook where, and I remember now, it's a cartoon. This fella's sitting and he's sipping on a cup of coffee with Jesus, who's also sipping on a cup of coffee. And he said, on all my business applications, he says, I'm going to place a little fish. So people will know that I'm a disciple of Jesus. And Jesus just asked and said, won't you leave it off and see if they can still tell? What Jesus tells us here in Matthew 5 in these verses is that people ought to see a difference in you. In every aspect of your life. Peter would tell us that we're a royal generation, a peculiar people. That were chosen to serve God. And we are to be the salt and the light of the earth, this world, so that people will have some semblance of hope. They ought to see Christ living in you. And this requires an outstanding and honorable conduct on our part. Peter tells us in 1 Peter 2 and verse 12, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. People ought to be able to look at us and say there's something different about that person. And then investigating, find out that you're a Christian. That's what's different about them. That's why they don't tell dirty jokes like everybody else here at work around the water cooler. That's why they don't go out drinking. You know, several years ago, I went with Marilyn to Ireland. And she'll tell you that when they get off work, it is a standard of life that you go to the pub to drink. That's what they do. And we went out to eat one night, and there were some that were there, and one of the fellows that went with Marilyn from here, he got him a glass of Guinness, that old dark, nasty-looking beer. Not that any of them are good, but that one looks like Coca-Cola, and they call it beer. And it's got a head on it, big foam on top of it. And he would take that thing, and he would sip on it. Finally, an Irishman told him, says, that's not the way to drink it. He said, you have to turn it up and chug it, and then that head leaves a mark on the glass all the way down, so you'll know you're drinking it instead of sipping it. But see, if we were to go out of town on vacation and the world looks at us and says, well, look at him, he's drinking his margarita, or he's drinking his Guinness the proper way, then they're going to look at us and say, they're just like us. You remember what the girl told Peter in the garden? When Jesus was on trial, your speech betrays you. Our speech shouldn't betray us. It ought to help identify us as being disciples of Christ. But you know, this mindset is especially true as we go about our business dealings, the way we make a living. Paul would tell us in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 11 and 12, for we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Now those who are such, we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. Paul's telling them that you've got to work and you need to mind your own business when you go out to do your work. But how do we make sure that we're behaving properly toward outsiders and our business affairs and things of this nature? I'll tell you, it's tough in this world right now. It's really tough. It's no secret we've moved into a house and I've been trying to find people to do some work around the house. Tree trimmer guy took a month to finish his job up. And I called him one day and I said, I thought you wanted a good name. He says, I do. And I said, do you think you deserve one? But it's irritating as a human being to find that nobody wants to work. And it's aggravating. But that still, you have to reflect Christ in your business dealings, even when nobody else wants to. And it's tough. Because like I say, the human side of me, the old country boy in me, gets a little aggravated when people won't work. But we've seen in the Proverbs how wisdom can be offered, and there's so much wisdom to be offered in regards to friends and family and so on. It also has much to say regarding our day-to-day work and business dealings. I've been employed in secular work before, most of my adult life. And I've had to devote my adult life to working for somebody else. And then most of my adult life, I've also been a preacher at the same time as working a secular job. And I have found that the book of Proverbs is especially helpful in this area. For example, I learned from the book of Proverbs to keep work in its proper place. It's not always smart to bring the job home, whether you're a preacher or not. Sometimes work needs to stay at work. And we need to remember what should take a priority in our lives. It is a fact of life that we have to work to provide for our families. Ain't nothing free. Ain't nothing free. And I don't care. You know, we've got a government that's giving out money hand over fist. It eventually will come to you. Free college. It'll eventually come to you. Somebody's going to have to pay for it. But if we aren't willing to work, then the church is not under obligation to help us. Paul tells us that in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 6. He says, but we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you withdraw from every brother who walks disorderly and not according to the tradition which he received from us. Paul makes a very clear point here that the church will and it has an obligation to help those who need help. He says, but if the case is you won't work, then the church is not obligated to help you. In fact, they need to withdraw from you. And if we don't provide for our families, he says, then we're worse than an unbeliever. That's what he tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. If anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his own household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever, an infidel, as some translations would say. So the Bible clearly tells us that as we live in this society, we have to work. It's a biblical principle that we provide for our own. If something were to happen in my life, then yes, the church might be able to help me occasionally. But the church is not under obligation to help those who will not help themselves. But sometimes there are misplaced priorities that can be very harmful to our very well-being. You know, I've made the statement before that Marilyn and I, when we occasionally get to watch TV together, a movie trailer will come on. And after we watch it, if we haven't got the show recorded so we can zip through all the commercials, if we see that movie trailer and we just look at each other, sometimes we don't even have to look at each other, we'll say, we're going to put that on the bottom of our list of things to do. And some of them here now, I tell her, it ain't even making a list. I don't even want to try to go see them. But we have a list of priorities in our life. And I think sometimes we get our priorities all mixed up. Righteousness and not riches should be our priority. Because righteousness is that which is truly profitable. The proverb writer tells us that in verse chapter 11 and verse 4. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. You look at all these millionaires and billionaires that are very prominent in our society. Take Bill Gates, for example. His money saved him from divorce. Take Jeff Bezos. I think he's the Amazon head, isn't he? Did his billions save him from his wife leaving him? Not when he's cheating. And that's what happened to Bill Gates. They put more emphasis on the riches and not the righteousness. And we need to seek to be righteous and not rich. Again, we go back to the book of Proverbs, chapter 11, verse 28. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. And it's better to have a little with righteousness than to be rich and wicked. The proverb writer talks about this as well in Proverbs 16 and verse 8. Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. I'd rather have nothing monetarily and know that I had the hope of heaven than to have all this money and to know that it corrupted me. Have all the money of life and know that it corrupted me and would prevent me from going to heaven. I want to be comfortable in this life, but I think we understand here from the book of Proverbs that we need to keep everything in its proper place. Remember what needs to take priority in our life. And when we do this, we also need to learn to involve God in our business affairs. And it doesn't matter if you own a business, run a business, work for a business, or just making a decision at home. Years ago, Cooks hired offered a promotion to a guy, but he had to relocate from somewhere down deep in Alabama to little old Shelbyville, Tennessee. And he and I got to talking one day, and he says, "Man," he says, "I tell you what." He said, "When they offered me this job," he said, "I'd get out and I'd walk the neighborhood every night." He said, "And I'd talk to God. And I'd ask God, what should I do?" He said, "I'd talk to my wife. But I'd talk to God every night." He said, "I'd come home and I'd eat dinner and I'd get out and walk around the neighborhood." He said, "I'd just talk to God and talk about it. Talk about it. Talk about what I needed to do on this decision." We need to involve God in all of our business affairs, our decisions, because it's then that our efforts are more likely to succeed. In fact, Proverbs writer tells us this in chapter 16 and verse 3, "Commit your works to the Lord and your thoughts will be established." You know, if you put God first in every aspect of your life, then a lot of these decisions are easy to make. You ever thought about that? Should I go with this job? Well, if you're a Christian, sometimes that's going to help you make up your mind. Should I go with this job? I've been offered a distribution manager's job where they'll give me a vehicle and I go out and I'll distribute tobacco or I'll distribute alcohol and it pays really, really good. Should I take that job? Well, let me ask you, are you a Christian? Did you ask God about it? You know, we need to avoid the very appearance of evil. And how can you be a Christian and go into all of these stores and say, "Here, I'm here with your best and newest product, our best and newest product for vodka, for hard liquor, for cigarettes, for anything that is damaging to someone's body or even addicted to someone's body. I'm here as your representative." "Oh, well, I thought you was a Christian. Where do you go to church at again?" What are you going to tell them? Did you involve God in that business decision? Think back to Genesis chapter 39 and the story of Joseph. Do you think Joseph involved God in any of his business dealings? I'm sure he did. Because later on, when he reveals himself to his brothers, he tells them that, you know, you meant the things that you did to me for bad, but God meant it for good. How did Joseph know that if he wasn't talking to God? God must have told him, you're here for a reason. And he'll tell his brothers, you meant it for bad, but God meant it for good. I'm here to save you, to save the family. We need to talk to God in all of our business dealings, and we're more likely to enjoy the results of what we receive if we only talk to God to begin with. And again, we go back to Proverbs chapter 10, verse 22. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. Isn't that what we would want? For our decisions to be good decisions based upon Christian principles, biblical principles? The great preacher Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes 5, beginning in verse 18, he says, here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor, in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for it is his heritage. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. Chapter 6 and verse 1, it continues, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. We need to involve God in every aspect of our lives, every aspect of our decisions as we make them throughout our lives. And when we learn to keep work in its proper place, we'll also remember that a business has a major shortcoming sometimes. And we never know when that's going to happen. The proverb writer again tells us in Proverbs 27 and verse 1, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. And James tells us the same principle in James 4, verses 13 through 16. And what they're telling us here, these writers, in these inspired writers are telling us this, is that we plan for tomorrow, but you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. When I worked for cooks, they always had us do our own schedule. I had a calendar book that I had to keep in my truck. And if I had to be at Sister Rosalie's house on Monday morning at 8 o'clock, it had to be in that book. Then I had somebody whose house I had to be at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and on down the line. And I had to schedule that every month. So she would know this month, I'll be here next month on July whatever, the third Monday. Every month it was like that. And it was up to me to plan it a month out. You know what always happened? Something. It didn't matter what it was. And inevitably, I would wind up calling somebody like Sister Rosalie and say, I can't make it today. I've got somebody with a problem that I got to go take care of their problem, but I'll get with you as soon as I can. We make plans. And how many times have you made plans and they get shut down or changed? And it doesn't matter if it's in the business world. It could be in the family world. It could be in any aspect. Maybe you're getting ready to go on vacation, and then something happens and you go, well, I'll have to reschedule. What Solomon is telling us here is, don't boast about tomorrow. Don't say, well, I've got it all planned out. You know, I've met people in my life that they say, well, I've got my life planned out till I die. I know what I've got going on. Really? Really? Do you even know what's happening tomorrow? Well, you got plans, but you don't know that that's what's going to happen. God may have other ideas about what you're going to do tomorrow. We had the announcement this morning. Two more families are going to have grandbabies. That's wonderful news. I did think Rick was going to look over at Danny and say, I think mine's going to be prettier than yours. And Marilyn says, I thought that's what he's going to say too. And I'm thinking, how do you even know they're not here yet? But we plan out our lives, don't we? And how many people plan out? Well, I'm going to have three babies. I'm going to marry so-and-so, and I'm going to have three children, four children, two children. I'm going to have them every 2 years apart, and we plan out our lives that way. You know people like that, don't you? Or I'm just going to have one child, or I'm going to have six children. Bill Doak, the first house we bought from him. And he told me, he said, I'm not stopping until I have an even dozen. I think he come up one or two short. But he had a lot of kids. That was his plan. Life changes. Now, again, I'll tell you my son's story. They wanted a little girl. Three little boys in the house, and they wanted a fourth one. They wanted it to be a girl. And they told the oldest son, said, pray for a sister. Pray for a sister. And then she gets pregnant. She goes to the doctor. Is it a girl? Is it a girl? No, it's a boy. But I got bad news for you. Life don't always go the way that you and I plan it out. Sometimes we have to go with the ebb and flow of what God puts in our lives. Wealth and stuff are fleeting. Having an abundance of stuff is not worth killing yourself to obtain. Now, like I say, I agree. I understand we want to be comfortable. The proverb writer tells us in chapter 23 and verses 4 and 5, do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. Stop. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. There's a lot of people in this world that come to learn the truths of life after a lifetime of realizing I've got nothing to show for what I've been working for. And what have I become? I work all my life. I'm working from sun up to sunset, and I'm not really making any headway. What have I learned? What have I gained in all of this? And they realize after so long a time that they've wasted so many years on things that are not really that important. But the value of the Proverbs is that even the young can know them early, these wisdoms, and apply them to their lives. So I also learned from the Proverb writer that I need to be careful, or to be successful as a laborer, that I need to learn to do certain things. One of those is what not to do. What not to do if I want to be successful. I don't need to be lazy. Give an honest day's labor for the pay that you're making. If you're only making minimum wage, then give them an honest day's labor. If you're making $50 an hour, give them an honest day's labor. Be honest. Don't be lazy. And the proverb writer tells us that will greatly irritate your boss. I'd say yes. You ever worked at the public job and there's somebody there that's just lazy? And your boss gets irritated with them, don't they? The proverb writer tells us in chapter 10, verse 26, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man to those who send him. And I'll just tell you, the lazy man will not be long in that job. They just won't. Don't be slothful in your work. The proverb writer tells us that it will ruin your company as quick as a competing company. Again, this goes hand in hand with being lazy. And how long will your job last if your company can't compete? The writer says in chapter 18 and verse 9, he who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer. What not to do? Don't be lazy and don't be slothful. But what should we do? Well, that's interesting. We need to develop a skill set in our job. Because if you make yourself a good employee, a good worker, it will not go unnoticed. And you know, believe it or not, the proverb writer talks about that. Chapter 22 and verse 29, do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. The good worker is the one that receives the rewards on the job. They'll receive a pay raise. They'll receive a promotion. Because that's what we need to do. And we need to be diligent in our work to ensure these promotions that we may want. Again, Proverbs 12 and verse 24, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. And then the job that you're doing, impress people with the quality of your work, not the quantity of your words. You know, you look at maybe somebody that's a carpenter, a mechanic, and you look at their work sometimes and you go, that's good stuff. That's a good job. And they don't say a whole lot when they're working. That's what the proverb writer is talking about here. Impress people with the quality of your work, your handiness, but not how much you've got to say about it. Well, I had this much trouble with this right here. You wouldn't begin to understand how much trouble I had getting this piece of work in for you. I had to order a special piece of tool. I had to do the job and do it right. That's all you've got to do. Impress people with that. Chapter 14, verse 23, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. You come work at my house, and all you're doing is complaining about how hard the job was. Am I likely to call you back? Would you call them back, Sister Rosalie? See? Words of wisdom. Do the job. Do it right. Don't complain about it. And let me tell you something. You want to hear some complaining? Work for a pest control company. I tell you what, I had some humdingers as customers. I can't call their names because some of them live here in Bedford County and they may be watching a live stream. But nobody liked going to that person's house. Nobody. And if somebody went in my place, they'd all but be cussed out. Well, send Jeff back out here. I've got him trained the way I want him to do it. Impress people with the quality of your work. You don't have to tell them what you're doing. Just do the job. You know, in today's competitive market, there are all kinds of skills that can be done and applied in our lives. But the best skills that one can have are such things as diligence. The person that's going to show up on time every time, and then be honest about your job. Be honest about what you've done. The wisdom from the book of Proverbs can help us become a valuable commodity in the workplace. So the proverb writer also tells us how to be a successful manager. He says, be a wise manager, first of all, in his writings. He says, be diligent in your planning and not too hasty in getting things done. If you're in charge, you've got more responsibility than the person under you. That's just the way it is. And you probably worked hard to be in charge for that promotion. Work your schedule so that the people in under you and the people above you will appreciate you. Plan it out. Don't be too hasty to get things done. Be diligent in how you plan out your job. Chapter 21 and verse 5, Solomon says, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty, but those of everyone who is hasty, surely to poverty." And then we've got to nurture and utilize the counsel from others. Now let me stop right here and say, there's going to be some that always have advice. And some of that advice you don't need to listen to. But there are some that will give good, solid advice, good counsel. And you need to be able to discern between the two. And Solomon talks about that in chapter 15, verse 22. "Without counsel, plans go awry. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established." You ever wonder why all the kings of old age and even presidents today have a multitude of people around them? It's because of the decisions that they have to make and the weightiness behind these decisions. They've got to have somebody to give them some advice. Remember Pharaoh in the story of Joseph? When he had his dreams, they shook him up so bad they woke him up twice, scared him. He called the seers, the magicians, and everybody, the astrologers. They couldn't tell him what these dreams meant. But why did he surround himself with these people? Because he wanted their advice. You take a president, take the president of the United States. He's got a job. And whether you like this one or not, like the last one, or you like don't like the next one that we have, the president of the United States has got to surround himself with people who are experts in certain fields. The president is a politician. And if you go to war, a politician don't need to run the war. You need a soldier. The politician doesn't need to make economic decisions. He needs an economic advisor. And I dare say they need to invest in a moral advisor with all of them that have come through. But you have to look for advice. You have to look for counsel, especially in the business field. You get a promotion and you say, "I'm going to turn this place upside down. I'm going to run it the way I want it to be run." And you've already shot yourself in the foot. You have to take the counsel from others. And you have to use it according to what and how good that or how valuable that counsel is. But then you got to stay on top of your job. And you do that by planning and using the counsel from others. Again, we go back to Proverbs and the 27th chapter in verses 23 through 27. It says, "Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds. Know who's working with you and for you. For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. When the hay is removed and the tender grass shows itself, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in, the lambs will provide your clothing and the goats the price of a field. You shall have enough goats, milk for your food, for the food of your household and the nourishment of your servants." Everything works in conjunction with everything else. But you've got to be diligent to know what's going on with those who are under you. You've got to know. When I turned in my notice at Cook's, I walked in and closed the door. And I told the guy, I said, "Well, I'm turning in my notice." Okay. And I'm thinking, no shock? No, won't you stay? And I said, "Why are you not more agitated?" I said, "Was I that bad of a worker?" And he said, "Jeff, we've been expecting you to leave for a long time." I said, "What?" He said, "We've been expecting you to go and preach full time for a long time. We've just been waiting for the shoe to drop. Had nothing to do with my quality of work, but they knew their employees under them. It's just like the boss man knows who's the laziest employee and knows who's the hardest working employee. You know who's hungry for money and needs the overtime, wants the overtime, and you know the person that's struggling financially that could use the overtime. You have to know these things about your people. You got to stay on top of your job. But also to be a successful manager, you have to be wise, but you also have to be a good leader. A good leader. Someone that's not oppressive. They don't rule with an iron fist. And Solomon talks about this in Proverbs 28 and verse 16. A ruler who lacks understanding is a great oppressor. But he who hates covetousness will prolong his days. I've had bosses like that. You have too. They stand over you wanting to make sure that you do everything right. They're oppressive. Don't be oppressive. But he also tells us in the book of Proverbs, be concerned for your employees, for their rights. In chapter 29, verse 7, the righteous considers the cause of the poor, but the wicked does not understand such knowledge. You have to get to know the you have to get to know the people that you work with. You have to. That's part of being a good leader. It's part of being a good and wise and successful manager. And part of that is treating them fairly. You've got to provide good treatment for those, for the environment that you're working in. You realize if you do that, you're going to gain their loyalty and love for you. It makes it so much better when, as a boss, you show that you care. And again, believe it or not, Proverbs talks about that. Chapter 29, verse 21. He who pampers his servant from childhood will have him as a son to the end. Have you ever had people that worked under you that maybe they move on or whatever and they stay friends? I was watching a thing on the internet today about some of the Atlanta Braves players. And they were talking about playing baseball. And you're going, well, duh, Jeff, it's the Atlanta Braves. But they were talking about all the way back to when they were in Little League, T-ball, Coach Pitch, Babe Ruth, on up the line. They're still friends with some of those guys. Because you make friends with people throughout life. And if you treat people fairly, you treat them justly, then they're going to remember you. And they're going to love you. And like Solomon says here, they're going to be like a son in the end. We've got to help our employees see how their work benefits them as well as the company. So he's going to be diligent in his efforts. He's going to be willing to give you a day's work. Proverbs 16, verse 26, the person who labors for himself, for his hungry mouth drives him on. You know, there's a lot more that could be said about working, providing, and how to work for your boss, for your family, how to be a good boss. But we're going to stop right here. And I've got experience as an employee. Now, granted, I think I've only worked 2 secular jobs in my lifetime. I worked at Howell Quaker in Lewisburg for almost 13 years, and I worked for Cook's Pest Control for almost 25. And I've had very limited management skills, not in a job setting, but in civic groups and things of that nature. But when you study passages like the book of Proverbs, you will find that if one keeps the need to work in proper perspective and applies then the principles that are found in this book and other scriptures, that in His providence, God not only provides for your necessities of life, but more often than not, to a good degree, the material abundance that you need in this life. The important thing to keep in mind is that throughout our business dealings, we must always look to the words of Jesus. And one of those passages we kind of wear out, and it's found in Matthew chapter 6 in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Chapter 6 and verse 33, "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." Now, like I say, I understand that's written in the context of anxiety. But I believe it's true. You want to be a good manager? Seek first the kingdom of God. You want to be a good employee? Put God first. Put God first on your list of priorities in every aspect of your life. And then I fully believe that God's going to provide the rest. We just have to be willing to believe that He will and trust that He will. You know, when you study the life of David, you might say he was the most praying king that Israel ever had. Because there's nothing that happened in his life that is not recorded about him praying. We need to pray to God. We need to pray, you know, and it doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out prayer, but just God, and he knows what you're going to pray about, just God, help me make the right decision. Be with me while I'm making this decision. And he will. But you've got to live a faithful life in order for him to bless you. So that comes down to this, the basic question that every sermon ends with. Are you a child of God? Have you obeyed Christ and put Christ on in baptism? If not, then that will help you in your business dealings, believe it or not. But also, if you've done that and you've gone back into the world, there might be something in your life that's preventing you from being successful. And it might be a sin. So if you have sin in your life that you need to confess, that you need to repent of, confess it as public as your sin is. But you know, it might be such a private sin that you don't want to announce it to everybody else. But you can ask the brethren here to pray with you and for you. Would you do that? Would you put on Christ in baptism? Would you confess your sins as public as they may be? Would you just ask for the prayers of the saints if that's what you need? If you're here tonight and you need to respond, I encourage you to make your way to the